Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-host, and with me today is Matt Smith. In the 16th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith, Matt will break down the last match for Fulham against Hull City from a coaching perspective. Later on, we'll have another edition of You're the Head Coach, and Matt will discuss what he would do if he was head coach of Fulham. Lastly, I will ask Matt his thoughts on the January transfer window for the club, as there's much to talk to him about. We have plenty to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show, Mr. Matt Smith. Matt, how are you doing?
Doing well, Russ. And I was I was a little under the weather last week. Had a bit of a sinus infection. So glad to be back. It's been a while. It seems like it's been forever since we played, and ready to get back into it.
Listen, I look forward to doing this with you. I mentioned this to you off air. I've actually had a few requests for the Coaching Corner. So obviously, people are listening and really enjoying the show, and I look forward to going through this with you. And let's start. Let's not spend too much time looking back at the Hull City match, but I do want to touch base on it a little bit and get your thoughts on it. Just overall, I know it was 2 weeks ago, but just share with me your thoughts on this unfortunate loss for Fulham. They played fairly well, though.
Yeah, it seems like 2 years ago. I think we saw some definite progression in the defensive organization and the attacking mindset, kind of what we want to accomplish and things like that. It's still gonna take some time. Unfortunately, I know a lot of people. When you bring in a new coach or a new manager, whatever you want to call him, you hope to have that kind of honeymoon period, where there's kind of a jolt of energy given into the club. And I think possibly the good thing that can come of this is that I think this is actually a long-term kind of thing. I think Jokanović is somebody who can really carry us forward and really is taking a team that was pretty broken down and is really going to be able to build us back up. So, maybe the good side to not having that instant jolt, although we have played better, maybe it's a long-term thing. But, I thought we played pretty well. I thought we had some decent performances. I thought defensively we were okay. It was really unfortunate, the goal we gave away. It seemed like like LVC kind of slipped when it happened. It was a stone-cold penalty, but it was just a little bit unfortunate on him. And a little bit unfortunate on us, considering how well we played and how well I thought that, we attacked. I think that we missed having Ross McCormick, especially when we had a couple of opportunities on free kicks, especially late on in the match. I mean, there were a couple that, I was saying, this is made for a Ross McCormick goal. We've seen him score so many off free kicks this year. But unfortunately, with him being, I think he was ill at the time, was kind of a downer, and obviously we didn't have that option. But, I think overall we're still progressing. I think that you're seeing an improved defensive shape and an improved defensive mindset. And I think that's only going to take us forward because, we're going to be, the goal is to turn losses into draws and draws into wins. And so I think the first step is to take these losses and turn them into draws. And that's going to start from defending and our defensive shape and mindset. So, I think things are definitely looking up. I know that, it was tough with kind of what we were and weren't allowed to do over the transfer window, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, I think that things are looking up. I think, I love the energy that he brings on the sideline, that he brings. And, he's heading every ball. He's kicking every ball, passing every ball. And so, you can't help but really just love the enthusiasm that he brings to the game, and hopefully he can kind of transfer to our players.
I'm glad that you mentioned that. Before we move on, his personality is infectious, and we talk about it here in New England with the Patriots taking on the mindset of their head coach. Do you see that happening with Fulham? Could his personality affect his entire team, meaning that we will see, a team that is really just takes on that personality of Slavica Jokanović and really being aggressive and spirited? Do you think you already might be seeing some of that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, especially just the vast difference in personality on the touchline from Kit to him. Kit was very calm and reserved and, very kind of methodical about his the way that he was going to react to goals and things like that. And, you know, it looks like Jukanovic, is dying to be out there with the players. And I think that goes a long way with players, that you have the passion and, to be able to pass on to the players is something that, not only do you say it, because I'm sure Kit said that and acted on it in different ways, but just to physically be able to show the passion that you have, the willingness that, or the want that you have to want to win and do well. And I think that, basically what it does is it gives the players no excuse, because, he's sitting there and going crazy and stuff like that. They can't say that, the manager's not very, not very excited, so we can't be very excited. I mean, I think that kind of takes that excuse away from them. So, it can kind of put a little bit more onus on them to react in the same way, to have the same kind of passion that he does, because I know that's what the fans enjoy.
Okay, very good there, Matt. And before we move on, I just want to get your thoughts quickly on the attack and the defense. And let's start with the attack. And I want to get your thoughts overall, but also on what I'm about to share. After the match, Jamie O'Hara was talking about the player form and how they, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but how they changed their mindset a little bit after halftime, how the players were talking about how they needed to take more shots. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but basically just be more clinical and try to take more shots. I'm curious if you noticed some of that in the second half and just the overall play of the attack. What are your observations?
Well, I think he did. I think you saw us still trying to work into, not wanting to shoot outside the box, wanting to get balls inside the box and finish inside the six and things like that, and kind of score, I guess what you would call kind of the perfect goal, which is, traditionally kind of what people think about when they think about teams like Arsenal and things like that. And, I think in order to, there's the old saying that I've always used, that if you don't shoot, you can't score. There's
right.
No, basically if you're not a threat to shoot from outside the box, it allows teams to sit in defensively on top of their box and just deny those passing channels. If you take a couple shots and actually take some quality shots and put them on frame, they're gonna have to step out to you to defend those shots, which is gonna open up more passing lanes, more chances for maybe some combination play around those players, to be able to get into the box and things like that. But, when you are one-dimensional in terms of where you want to finish from, I think that really is going to limit your ability to be successful in that, because they know that you're not going to shoot outside the box. So it's kind of like, in basketball, if you watch a seven-foot center, when Shaquille O'Neal would step out to the three-point line, nobody's going within 20 feet of him because they know he's not shooting. So it's the same kind of deal. Where if we do put some quality shots in from outside, from range, I think you're going to see that back line and those center mids have to start to step up and pressure our first touch. So that opens up room for different opportunities for us to get in behind them.
Okay, very good there, Matt. And, again, if you are interested in hearing Jamie's comments from the match, I know it was a couple of weeks ago, what's up, right on the Fulham website, he talks about how the players did talk about this at halftime, how that they needed to take more shots, and I think it does open things up, so I'm glad that you would mention that. Let's now move to the defense in this match real quick, because one thing that I noticed, especially when you looked at the average positions, the center backs were pushed way up, Matt. Is that a good sign for Fulham?
Well, it can be. I think, obviously, when you do that, you expose space in behind. There's always going to be, every time you change shape, you're going to be gaining something, but you're also going to be giving something up. When that happens, obviously we're giving up space behind, but I think that, but it also, what it does, it also compresses the space and gives them limited space to be able to play in front. So you can win the ball a little bit higher up the field and kind of break up possession, which I think was overall pretty successful, because I could only count a couple of times when they were able to get in behind. One was a header that we just lost, and a guy stuck in behind us when we were kind of flat. But I think that was kind of the biggest thing is do we just push up and hold a hard line? Or are we kind of flowing kind of like an accordion up and back as play flows, and You don't want to see both center backs press up hard, because then they end up being flat and parallel to each other, which allows one pass to beat two players, which is kind of the cardinal sin in defending. You want to make them work for it. And so if you can make one pass only beat one player and allow one to step up to cover, that's the ideal thing. And so I think just getting that kind of movement of one steps up and then the other one drops in behind and covers kind of thing, then you can start to be a little bit more effective.
Okay, that's a really interesting observation, because I thought it was encouraging to see them pushed up so high, but like you said, it can leave gaps in back, and that's why you have to be very careful with that. So it can be good in one way, but you have to make sure that you keep your shape. Very interesting observations there, Matt. All right, let's now move on. Let's talk about the January transfer window. I find it fascinating. Obviously, Fulham had the transfer embargo, but believe it or not, made some interesting moves. Do you believe that this was a successful window, Matt?
Well, I think with all the restrictions that were on us and things like that, I think you have to say yes. I think that from a number of things, from not only from the players that we brought in, but also the players that we didn't have going out. I think that so there's that the combination of the two. I think overall you have to say it's a pretty big success for the club. To be able to hold on to Ross and to Musa. And then to add the three players that we brought in on loan, I think it's going to add options, add depth, and I think at the end of the day, add quality. I think the team is going to be better because of it, not only because of the people that we added, but because of the people that we didn't lose. So I think that you're going to see, and I think you're going to see these players get a chance, pretty quickly. I think that, with the news of the analytics guy being sent back to the United States, I think it shows that that they're giving Jukanović a little bit more reins on a little bit more say on transfers and things like that. I think his track record is a proven one, that if he can get his players in and the players that he kind of pinpoints to bring in to help the team, I don't think we can really doubt him right now because of his track record.
Okay, that's an interesting take on that. Let's now talk about the analytics situation, because this has been a huge talking point. It was on our last show, and I plan on doing a full show talking about analytics. Where do you fall on this, Matt? With having a gentleman that was part of the mix and making decisions, using analytics, I'm for it as long as it's a tool. But Slavisa needs to have final say, and based on the comments from Sarah Brooks, he has final say. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she was pretty strong about the decisions when it comes to players coming in and probably leaving as well. What are your thoughts about using analytics?
Well, I think that from sport to sport, analytics are used very differently. I think that everybody looks back to the movie Moneyball and kind of how the analytics kind of style of selecting players started with the Oakland A's and how that was successful. Here's kind of why that maybe doesn't work as well, or works differently, maybe is the best way to put it, from one sport to the other, is in baseball is such a statistics driven sport. It is, do you do this or do you not? Even though it's a team sport, it's still very much an individual sport. There's one batter, there's one pitcher, the ball gets hit to one person, so on and so forth. So, so it is a little bit more easy. It is a little bit easier to isolate those statistics and say, this is what this guy's going to do. I think in football, I think there's so much that depends on other things. So how well a right back attacks kind of depends on A, what formation you're playing, B, how effective is your winger? If you're playing a 4-3-3, how effective is your right winger at attacking? Do you need a winger that's going to get up and down? Do you need somebody who's going to stay home? Do you need somebody who's just going to fill the space? Do you have a winger that cuts inside a lot? So you do need somebody keeping that width. I think there's just so many variables that go into what player fits. If the person doing the analytics is selecting the team, but the manager or the coach is selecting how the team plays, there's no synergy there. There's no relationship, and it seemed like there wasn't. It seemed like he had some clashes. The guy had some clashes with some of the first team staff. then obviously there's no synergy there and there's no relationship there about, you know, would Jurcanovic go to him and say, hey, here's the kind of player that I need. Use your analytics to go get that. It seems like that wasn't the case. It seems like the analytics department would come back and say, this is the player you need, end up. And that can be a big problem because at the end of the day, they're not selecting the team. They're not writing the 11 down on the team sheet. You know, the coach is. So I think that in football, I think it's a little bit, yes, should you use analytics in terms of style of play? You know, you need the analytics to basically marry in with the system of what your manager wants to do. And it doesn't seem like that was going on. And so I think what you're seeing is Jurcanovic getting this, you know, getting, I guess, to kind of shop for his groceries, I guess, is probably the best way to put it.
See, that's a great way to put it. I'm used to that here in New England. Keep going back to the Patriots. But for me, it is about shopping for the groceries. He's shopping for the groceries. Craig Klein is the analyst, and Craig can make suggestions. But overall, it is up to Slavisa to make the final decision, and that's the way it should be. That's why I didn't mind it being a piece of the puzzle, Matt, but I don't want it to be like Moneyball. Moneyball is you did everything by the stats. And I believe this is not the case. The analytics department with Craig Klein, they can make the suggestions via their analytic model, but overall it needed to be Slavisa's decisions, and that to me is the most important thing to come out of this, is that he seems to have final say, and that to me is all that matters. As long as he's, like you said, shopping for the groceries, this person can make all the suggestions in the world. That's fine. He can choose to listen to it, but he can also choose to go with all the other factors, like film work, like scouting, like talking to other players about him, like interviews. There are so many things, so many factors, and as long as it's only used as one piece of the puzzle, I don't have a problem with that. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. I mean, like I said, I think it's got to be, there's got to be a healthy working relationship, and it seemed like that broke down on several occasions. So, I think that this is, this is overall a positive move, I think. I think it goes from, possibly why we missed out on some of our other managerial targets. We're kind of going back to being able to let, and I think it shows the confidence that everybody has in the manager, from the front office. So I think it's definitely a positive move.
Absolutely. Maybe I'm reading too much between the lines, Matt, but I think that there has been a shift, meaning that Slavisa now is in charge. Yes, obviously, Mike Rigg, Alistair McIntosh, everyone has their roles. But when it comes to who's going to be playing for Fulham Football Club, I think that there's no doubt, based on what I've read, the comments, well, I shouldn't say no doubt, but pretty strongly feel that Slavisa has final say. I think that's massive. I think because he's going to be grooming the future team and the team now and going forward. So I think it's very important. So I'm glad that we could at least talk about that because it's been a very huge talking point. But and like you mentioned, Craig Klein is no longer with Fulham right now, and he's probably not needed because the transfer window is gone. And now this is Slavisa's team, and we'll see how things go moving forward. All right, Matt, let's talk about the individual players brought in. Fulham did bring in a center back from Austria, Michael Mattel. What are your thoughts about bringing in an additional center back?
Well, I think just off the top, I think obviously it gives you options. I think it shows that the manager, or the coach, Jurcanovic is not exactly pleased with, not settled on his center back pairing. And I think we've seen that even before the transfer window because of how many, he would use different pairings to see kind of what worked. From looking at Mattel, I think that he's going to bring, obviously he's going to bring some international experience. Comes very highly touted, had over 100 appearances, for his last club, and he's only 27. So he's not, he's not not an old guy. I think he's going to be young and athletic and, he's going to bring a lot of good qualities to us. So, life's about options, and the ones usually that are in power have options. And so you want that kind of stuff to at best, you bring in a good player that makes you better. At worst, you're going to bring in a player that is going to push the players in front of him to be better so that they keep their spot. And so when you bring in that competition, I really don't think anything bad, you know, can really come of it unless there's a chemistry problem. But it seems like Jokanović probably has a decent relationship with this guy to be for him to come in on loan to a struggling championship team and you know, hopefully he can perform right away. I think we're actually probably will see him along with the other loan signees. I think we may see him sooner rather than later.
I totally agree with that, and I look forward to seeing what he can bring us. All right, Matt, let's talk about a player that I've touted as potentially could be the most impactful of the loan signings, and that's defensive midfielder Rohan Ince from Brighton Hove Albion. David and I have talked on Cottage Talk how much Fulham desperately needed a defensive midfielder to really protect the back four. What are your thoughts about this move?
I think it's a great move. I was able to Heather and I were there at the Brighton and Hove Albion game last season, and he actually played against us, and I was very, very impressed with his abilities and his athleticism at defensive center mid. Reminded me of a young Dixon Atuhu with probably
wonderful.
A little bit more athleticism and a little bit more footballing, just pure footballing ability. So I think he's going to bring a lot to us. I mean, another young guy, 23, and, you know, I think he's going to bring a lot to the table. This is one I'm pretty excited about, see how it goes.
Myself as well, and David and I have talked about we needed a Dixon, a Tuhu type. So for you to even say that obviously gets me even more excited. All right, let's talk about the wild card. I'm calling him the wild card because we're not exactly sure what we're going to get from this player. Howie touted as a youngster, so it should be interesting that Fulham signed on loan Zakaria Lubjet. He's an attacking midfielder from Sporting de Portugal. What are your thoughts of this loan signing?
Well, I think it could be a very good one. You know, he's a Dutch player. You know, he's from the Netherlands. Has played in, you know, played all over the place. You know, started at PSV, which is a, you know, obviously a very prestigious club. And plays now. I guess now has made himself a Moroccan national. But somebody that I think is going to come in and bring some. Again, just some youth, some exuberance, some excitement, and just kind of a different kind of look for us. I think that we just need variation, and we need, you know, you want to have as much, you know, as many different types of players as you would like, and you know, to bring somebody in like that, you know, could be pretty exciting, and especially in the attacking center mid, which, you know. We were okay there, but we were still maybe a little bit behind the mark in terms of just athleticism and kind of the whole package into attacking center mid. And so hopefully he can bring something like that. And again, I think he's again somebody who we're going to see sooner rather than later. Maybe play him next to Heinemann or him next to O'Hara, something like that. And so, going back to Ince, I think Ince is going to be a big one because maybe we could. Play just the one holding center mid and play with two attacking to allow O'Hara to get it more into the attack and allow Lubjet to get more into the attack. And so I'm, you know, obviously haven't seen a lot of these players play in person except for Ince, but, you know, I'm excited to see what they bring to the table. And, it's going to bring, just like Jokanović coming in as a new manager and bringing like a shot of energy, I think also bringing new players in and them getting a chance to kind of show their wares and in England on the big stage, I think is going to also bring us another shot of energy.
Okay, very interesting. Let's just quickly go right back to Lubjet. The one thing that I noticed when I watched this video, I know it's just a video, but one thing that stood out for me, and when I was checking his information on WhoScored.com, it mentioned one characteristic, which is very interesting. It goes back to what we were talking about before. Matt, he takes several long shots. He takes shots from distance, and I think that is needed. And that was the one thing that really stood out for me, is that he's not afraid to shoot. He reminds me a little bit of Clint Dempsey in that way. I noticed that a great deal, so many shots from long distance. Do you see that as potentially one of the reasons why he might be brought in?
Yeah, no, I think so. I think it, you know, just being able to add that facet and somebody who's willing to do that and willing to take on shots and not be afraid to take chances from range is going to be big. And, you know, he was, you know, obviously he's looked at as a player for the future, because, you know, as reading the stuff from Sporting, you know, he's kind of seen as one of the pillars in their growth of that club by the manager. So, it's exciting to have a young player who is going to bring something different and bring, maybe some power and some ability to shoot from range.
Okay, very good. All right, Matt, now I have to talk about one that had our watching our heads at the very end of the window. David and I were shocked by this move. I'm curious your thoughts about Fulham bringing back center back Fernando Morabieta, who can also play left back. What are your thoughts of bringing him back?
Well, it's interesting on why I guess we needed him. I read some of the comments on some of the Facebook pages, and somebody said, we did only have two left-sided center backs, so we definitely needed a third, which is obviously made tongue-in-cheek. I think it's to bring in more competition. I really think it is. I think it shows even more that he's not that Jokanović is not satisfied with the pairings that we've had at center back. And maybe he's, somebody that we're looking to take a spot. So, you know, I really don't see him getting into the side. He's been kind of underwhelming at times for me, but, if he has a role to play to at least push the players in front of him, if that's the worst thing he does, then, so be it. So, but it's always good to have a Fulham guy back at the club and stuff like that. And I know he loves the club and stuff like that, but, I think it will be tough for him to get in the side, but, we'll kind of see how things play out.
Okay. And going the other way was Botterill. Botterill went out on loan, so that it kind of made sense, one coming in, one leaving, but it's also curious. We'll see how that all plays out. All right, Matt, one thing we have to talk about, the window you already touched on a little bit. Did Fulham do the right thing in regards to not selling McCormack and Dembele this window? I'm curious your thoughts on this.
Two separate cases. I think not selling Dembele is probably in the long run gonna hurt us financially, because I believe he probably is gonna leave in the summer. We will get a small compensation package for his contract running out. I think I saw it was somewhere in the neighborhood of £200,000 or something like that. But to not be able to cash in on somebody like that, was tough. But I think at the end of the day, we needed, with Colley out still for an extended period of time. I think kind of what may have broken those talks down was the fact that we wouldn't be able to get him back on loan for the rest of the season. Just from a playing staff perspective, we actually needed him. I think that's probably what broke it down. And so you kind of gain something and lose something. I think we're going to lose him in the summer and have to deal with not, cashing in on a player. But I think right now our biggest thing is with the situation we're in is we have to look at the here and now, and we'll actually lose a lot more money than £5 million if we go down.
Absolutely.
And so staying up in the championship is much more lucrative than £5 million. So if that's what it takes to keep us up, then I think you have to do it. Now in Ross's situation, to not only a player who's under contract for a length of period of time and somebody who's going to be at the club, but it's also somebody who's been your captain. It's somebody who's been your on-field leader. It's somebody who's scored a lot of important goals for us. And then to not only that, but to possibly sell him to another championship side, I don't think was probably the best look for us. I think that keeping him could be even more important than keeping Dembele because of how long obviously he's going to be with us for a couple of years. And so, he's going to be very, very important to kind of what we do and has been important to what we've done. So, I think that the three players we brought in, or four players if you want to count Morabieta, that we brought in, keeping those two players I think was more important than bringing in the others, because those are the guys who have been scoring our goals. And with our lack of options up front right now and lack of kind of depth up front, I think it was very, very important for us to stay up.
I think keeping both those players was was extremely important. And that, to me, made it a success. Everything else adds on top of it. But keeping McCormack and Dembele was huge, Matt. And what's interesting is that I believe Slavisa really sees the value in Ross McCormack. I'm going to read this article to you because I think it's going to talk a little bit about the future of McCormack with the team, according to Slavisa. All right, this article is on Get West London by Paul Warburton. It is entitled "Fulham Will Build a Team Around Ross McCormack Promises Boss Slavisa Jokanovic." I'm just going to read the article quickly. Whites intend to keep their top scorer, who missed out on a money-spending move to Middlesbrough, as side prepares to battle Derby and avoid relegation. Fulham not only plan to keep Ross McCormack long-term, they intend to build a team around him and improve their fortunes. So claims Slavisa Jokanovic, who insists the club's top striker has got over the disappointment of missing out on his move to Middlesbrough. Jokanovic believes things are calm now that the transfer window has shut, despite leaving the Scotland international battling to avoid relegation rather than looking towards the Premier League with Barrow. His manager added that McCormack will play a pivotal role, part in White's fortunes now, starting with a home fixture to Derby tomorrow and in the future. These are quotes from Slavisa. Quote, "Now everything is calm after the transfer window. Ross McCormack is our key player, and we will build a team around him in the future," the coach added. "He is the best striker in the league, and if we decide to sell him, then it would be hard to replace him with something we have right now in our hands. I spoke with him, and Ross is more calm and concentrated, and our job is to look into the future." Jokanovic insisted he sensed no disappointment in the player Fulham paid Leeds a reported £11 million for in the summer of 2014. Quote, "In this business, he understands very well all that can happen," Jokanovic said. But Jokanovic flat-batted the offer of any new contract to someone who was under wraps until 2019 already. Jokanovic said, "Right now, we don't have any reason to change this position. Things happen in natural steps." Okay, Matt, those are comments from the Fulham head coach, Slavisa Jokanovic, about Ross McCormack, talking about building the team around him. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that it's perfectly valid. I think Ross McCormack is somebody you can build a team around. I felt that that's what Kit was trying to do, or at least that was his goal, or at least that was the goal of bringing him in. And that kind of price tag, you assume that he's probably a keystone player that you're going to build around. And to bring in players that can play at his pace and his speed of thought, I think is going to be, you know, very important to not only seeing our improvement, but also the effectiveness of him.
Okay, excellent there. And I just find it interesting, after everything that went down during the transfer window, we have Slavisa talking about building the team around him, and it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But he is one of those types of players that if that's what he wants to do, you could. I was not sure, Matt, if he was his type of player, but after those quotes, it sounds like he is.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds like he is, and it does sound weird when, you know, we were possibly going to sell him and things like that. But I think that it was, you know, it sounds like it was possibly more coming from Ross's side than it was Jokanovic. So it's definitely good to hear that. And also it's probably good for Ross to hear that, you know, he's going to be kind of the key man and the person we're going to build around.
I think it's a good thing. I really do. I've gone back and forth on McCormack, but I see his value. And if Slavisa wants to build a team around him, so be it. I was thinking that potentially they could sell him in the summer, but it sounds like Slavisa's thinking, no, I want to build a team around him. And if that's what he wants to do, I will back the manager because so far so good with him. And if that's the direction he wants to go, let's see his vision through. All right, Matt, let's now go to the section for the last 10 minutes. You're the head coach. Let's start here. What would you be working on these past 2 weeks in training to improve the attack for the match against Derby County?
Well, I think that you continue to work on the defensive shape. I think the biggest thing probably that you work on is integrating the new players into the team and defining their roles and kind of what they're going to do. And, I'm sure they've probably played some friendlies or at least some friendlies against maybe the under-21s or something like that to try to nail that stuff down. I think that you continue to pound home your your message in terms of defense, in terms of defending set pieces, in terms of how you want to attack and things like that, and kind of how the new players are going to fit in to that. I think it's a great thing to be able to have this time to not only do that, but you're able to, you know, I mean, Darby County played midweek, so you're able to actually sit down. You know, they've played two games since we played ours, you know, since we played our last game. So you're able to get two pretty good looks at them and kind of see what you're able to do, scout them extremely well. I'm sure they broke those games down, you know, very, very well, and I definitely have a very solid game plan. It's something that, you know, there's really no excuse to go out and execute tomorrow because you know, you've had 2 weeks to prepare and you've had two games to watch, two very different games. You know, they played a game where, you know, against Man United, obviously they were going to be defending a good bit, and then you saw them play a game against Preston where, you know, you saw them probably play a little bit more what you would consider a normal game for them. So you're able to see kind of all the ins and outs of what they're trying to do and how you can stop it.
Let me ask you, as a head coach, how much of an advantage is it to you, if you are the head coach, to have these 2 weeks, to have Darby County playing a few matches to prepare specifically for this one match?
Well, I think that, you know, obviously Darby's a very, very good team. They're, you know, top of the league for a reason. They are, you know, or towards the top of the league for the reason. You know, some very, very talented players. Another Ents plays for them, so it'll be cousins possibly playing against each other. You know, they're at times they're very scary coming forward. So I think we've got to be very, very sound defensively and very, very aware of how they want to play and how they want to move the ball. And you know, from what I've noticed, they do like to get the ball wide, but then work the ball very central as you get to the middle, as you get to the final third. And they are very, very good at it. I think the goal against Man United that they scored was top class, you know, at any level. And so, you know, I think that our center backs are going to have to be very aware of runners making penetrating runs. And, you know, and so I think you've got to try to replicate that as best you can in training and, you know, and make sure that we don't get caught flat, kind of what we talked about earlier. And, you know, you're very aware of those runners, you know, making runs into the box and, you know, just be sound defensively in terms of personal responsibility.
Okay. Very good there, Matt. All right. With these 2 weeks, the next match coming up, obviously, tomorrow, would this have given you a chance for potentially self-evaluation of your team, the individual players, your coach and staff, and yourself? Would you, as a coach, use this to really look at the bigger picture?
You know, with bigger picture stuff, you've got to, you know, like I said, you've got to kind of instill your message and instill your passion and, you know, try to find a way to come out of this, not only obviously rested, but come out of it energized. And so, you know, there's, you know, what you deal with a lot of times, and you hear this talked about some over here in different sports, is when does rest turn into rust? And so, you know, you've got to keep your players sharp. You've got to keep them fit, but you've got to find the line between that and, you know, between that and rest and keeping them sharp. And so, you know, I think that's probably the hardest thing to deal with when you're dealing with a long layoff like 2 weeks, is, you know, dealing with players having a lot more time on their hands because they, you know, maybe you give them a day off here, a day off there, but then also getting back in training, having very energetic training sessions, high energy, high intensity, and maybe you go a little bit longer than you would normally because you're not worried about a game, you know, this past weekend or something like that, and, you know, making sure that everybody's focused on the next game, but also kind of moving forward and kind of, you know, this is how we're gonna turn losses into draws, draws into wins, and so really trying to bang home that point, and those points, you know, just over and over again, so that it just becomes kind of second nature for us.
Okay, very good. And just to end the show now, we're gonna just end on this note. I want to talk about this match as a head coach from a coaching perspective. What would be your expectations going into this match? You're talking about building. Are you looking to at least get a point, or are you thinking, you know what, we need to win this match? What would be your your perspective on this as a coach. Would you be looking for a small, you know, I guess you could say a small improvement, meaning getting a point, or it's like, no, we need to be getting all 3 points in this match against Darby County?
Well, I think it's coming time where we've got to pull off some shock results, and this would be a shock result. I mean, if you just look at the table, somebody, you know, stepping in and never seen a championship game would look at the table and say, yeah, you know, Darby should probably win by 2 goals. But, you know, you've got to, you know, in order to kind of, you know, really jettison your season forward, I think you've got to look for a shock result or two. And that's how you end up staying up. I mean, you look at, you know, in the past in different leagues. I mean, for instance, when we stayed up, you know, in the Premier League a couple of years ago, you know, when we had the Great Escape, I think that, you know, we had some shock results at Man City, you know, things like that where, you know, we didn't leave 2 points on the table. We were able to get all three. And so, you know, I think that, you know, right now, would we be disappointed with any small moral victory, a draw, whatever? Yes, obviously you would take that. But, you know, I think at this point of the season, to be able to kind of jettison yourself kind of into the stretch run here coming up, I think you need to look to try to get all 3 points. I think that you would be, I think you'd be cheating yourself, and you'd probably be kicking yourself possibly at the end of the season if you go in to, you know, just to draw the game. Because if you go in just to draw, then, you know, more likely than not, you're going to be, you know, under a lot of pressure and possibly losing the game. So I would think you'd go into this game with a mindset of, hey, this is a must win. This is a game that we need to win. We need to get all 3 points, you know, and you know, this can kind of propel our season into a different, you know, and kind of say, okay, after January, okay, now this is a different season. You know, we win this game. Now this is a different season, different team. Let's move forward. Let's climb up the table and get out of trouble.
I totally agree with that. And everything that you said about that, I see this as an opportunity to be a springboard to the rest of the season. And you were talking about shock results. Guess what? Last year we had 2 shock results in the second half of the season. That was against Derby County and that was against Middlesbrough. Both of them are coming up. These are matches that that are opportunities to really move yourself away from the relegation zone and then have a comfortable end of the season and see how far up the table you can go. I say you need to go for it here. Would I turn away a point? Of course not. But I see this as having 2 weeks to prepare for an opponent. You should win this match. You're home. You should win. I know how good Derby County are. I know that they're on a bad run of form. But you still, with all that, because at the other side, Matt, is that people will say, well, they're due. They're due, right? They're due. Well, Fulham are due, too. So I think they have to go with the mindset, we're getting all 3 points. And I wouldn't be shocked if they do. In fact, I can tell you this. I will be predicting on the preview show for them to win because I feel good about this match. I really do. All right, Matt, any final thoughts before we go?
No, just excited to see possibly a new-look Fulham, and I would look to see you know, all three loanees possibly play a part if healthy, and you know, kind of see if that doesn't kind of give us a jolt of energy to kind of propel the season.
Okay, very good. One last question, because I was just thinking about this, so I'm sorry I'm ending with this. David and I have been talking so much about this, Matt. They now brought in 2 center backs. Do you think there's any chance we could possibly see the 3-5-2?
I think it's a possibility. I think more than likely you'll see either 4-4-2 or 4-3-3 or, you know, a 4-1, you know, a 4-1-3-1 or you know, whatever. You know, whatever you want to call it, 4-1-3-2, something like that. I think that you'll probably still see you'll probably still see advanced wingers one way or the other. That would be my bet. But you know, there's definitely that possibility, and you know, have those players played in a 3-5-2. The new players coming there, the 2 new center backs coming in. That's the one thing you've got to kind of see how they deal with that new formation. So, you know, if it were my bet, I would say we'd probably go 4-4-2 or some semblance of that. But but you never know. I mean, maybe it's something that we're trying to catch Derby off guard and really trying to not only change personnel but change formation. Something that there's no way they could have scouted.
Exactly. I'm just throwing it out there. Okay, Matt, excellent show. Thank you so much for doing this with me, my friend. I hope you enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely, man. Always enjoy it. Always enjoy talking Fulham. Can't wait to watch it. We'll be in Atlanta tomorrow. Heather and I will be in Atlanta, hopefully meeting up with Jason down there and get to hopefully see us take away 3 points.
I hope so. I look forward to seeing the match as well. Well, that's going to do it for the 16th episode of the Coaching Corner with Matt Smith. For Matt, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, Matt.
Cheers, Russ.